Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stop. Hello and welcome to the AI Movie Night. I'm your host, Rory Greenfield. I always have to get that right because I host two podcasts now and I basically almost say the other one every time. I've got a guest that's not appeared on a movie podcast before. A friend of mine I met on social media because of our love of Liverpool, but also films, essentially. And I kind of wanted to get him on to talk a few films, but it kind of felt right to talk about this one because we both got a kind of nostalgic, you know, movie interest in us. So we're talking about Ready Player One and Steven Spielberg. And my guest is Victor Fagerström. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. As I said, we met, well, you've got a giant, you know, Twitter account, obviously, but you've also got a kind of personal one where I noticed you talk about films a lot of people I interacted with. And then a couple of years ago, we just have a very similar interest in movies. I think you're one of the only people that probably watches as many as me, if not more than me, which is, I always think is a good thing. I'll do a slightly, let's open with a kind of question. We'll move on to Spielberg in the film because there's loads to cover. It's a massive, massive release. And there's a load of hype around it. There's a lot of films out at the minute, though. And I was just going to get your thoughts. And I know you don't like ranking films, so this is a bit cruel. But what's the best film you've seen this year so far? And then what's the film you're most looking forward to seeing this year?
Ooh, starting with a big question. The best one could arguably A Quiet Place from Krasinski's new film.
I knew you were going to say that. That's why I asked you that question.
Really?
Yeah.
Saw it recently, you know, had its premiere not too far ago.
I don't think it's recent. I mean, 2018 isn't exactly old yet, but I think I'd echo that because I watched it last week and it blew my mind, to be honest.
It was so cool how it, you know, had fun with, you know, all the sound mixing.
Yeah.
So, as I said, I think I wrote it on Twitter as well, you know, there's so many layers of sound that I barely knew that you can have such a variety.
I've been so nervous in the cinema to make a noise, is my thing. Because I was in the cinema.
No, it was so tense.
I've seen the trailer, and the trailer gave one thing away that it probably shouldn't have done, you know, and I'm not going to do spoilers because people won't have seen this film yet. But the trailer doesn't really kind of tell you what the film's about. And then you watch it, and I mean, there wasn't many people in the cinema I went in, which was good. There's only about 15, 20 people. But everybody stopped making noise as soon as they realized how quiet that film is. And literally anyone with popcorn was so nervous reaching for the popcorn.
Yeah, so you had a good experience then with the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. I know there's some people that maybe haven't had a good experience, and it's one of those that maybe a full screen would be really cool, and then maybe on your own in the cinema would be really scary, but in the right kind of way. I think it's more tense than scary, but it's so clever.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. I'm glad you said that. And then I think there's only one right answer for this next question, but if you've got something else, I will oblige your answer.
So the one you're thinking of is of course, a new Avengers film coming out in, what is it, 13 days here in Sweden?
Have the 25th? You got it on the 25th? How
yeah,
you got it on the
one
25th?
Day early from you guys, right?
Yeah, that's about time, because I remember last year you had to wait 2 months for Baby Driver to be released.
It drove me mad, man. I'd seen it like 3 times before I even had the chance to see it once.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, but it's got to be Avengers.
Infinity, yeah, I think so. I mean, some other cool releases I'm looking forward to this year. I think the Mission Impossible film might be pretty special in the summer. And then there's a couple of big animations. Second Incredibles film is getting quite a lot of hype. Yeah. My kids are quite excited, and that would be a good thing to watch as a family, so that's always good. And yeah, there's a few studios and stuff knocking around. I think... for me, because A Quiet Place took me such by surprise, I kind of now suddenly looking forward to horror films and stuff, which isn't really me as a rule, you know? So it's good. It's good when a film does that. I mean, the big thing about Ready Player One, have you read the book before the film?
No, I had not, actually. And no. Judging by the people, their opinions on the film who have, I'm kind of happy I didn't. You know, because they seem to differ quite a bit.
Yeah, I think I'm glad as well. So I bought the book last year when I watched the trailer, because I was like, right, for once, I'm going to read the book and watch the film afterwards. But then I'm super busy and I never got around to it. And I'm kind of glad, because I think the more I heard about the film, the more I thought, right, okay, just maybe read the book afterwards, because I thought there was going to be some changes. And it turns out the changes are quite vast.
And my favorite sequence in the movie isn't even in the book, so
yeah, you know, I think my favorite
certain scene in the middle.
We could sort of spoil it. So anyone that's listening to this, we're going to talk about the movie in depth, and just kind of get a good overall view of it. So we'll talk the scene in the middle, which is The Shining, I think is what you're referring to, and then the opening sequence with the car race, it, again, is not in the book. So it's quite interesting that they kind of adapted it. But I know why they did, because there's a lot of scenes, you know, a lot of feeling from the book is I mean, this film is pop culture nostalgia overload, which is, you know, it's got everything in it, from Back to the Future to like gaming references, you know, Halo and various, and then you know, the Godzilla and King Kong and
there's so many, endless.
And it's just, you could list off, I think if we had an hour to just list off the references, that's all we would do in this film. And I will touch on that with others. Yeah, I think you could. It's absolutely mental. And I'll give my favourites a little bit later on. But that opening scene, I mean, with the car chase, that's not in the book. And in the book, it's a Dungeons and Dragons sequence. And you know, listening to the author who kind of co-wrote the screenplay and worked a little bit closer with Spielberg to kind of move it in that kind of direction for a more mass audience than your book reader that was interested in this kind of book. They made it more accessible and they made this huge, incredibly visceral kind of dynamic neon car race, basically, the New York backdrop, and the backdrop even references, you've got things like the Warriors and Ghostbusters and stuff in there, which is just awesome because it's proper New York. And then the actual race itself, you've got the bike from Akira, you've got the DeLorean, you've got, you know, King Kong and everything. And I think that race, for me, watching it one time in the cinema was amazing. I mean, you watched it again yesterday. Did it blow your mind again?
Yeah, I could. You know, that's one of my favorite sequences in the whole movie, and it's like 3 minutes in. It's so phenomenal. First time I saw it in the movies, it was 3D.
Yeah.
It was 2D last night. So definitely prefer the 3D, but still in 2D, it looked amazing. It sets the tone right away for the entire movie with color palettes and, you know, how they interact with all these references. You know, some are just flying by. You know, when they line up the cars, you can maybe spot one or two more. You don't know. It's so quick. So if you don't know
you'd have to watch it, like, you'd have to frame it like frame by frame to even catch some of them. They're so
yeah, cool, I'm sure.
And I think
that's a good thing, I think, because you know,
yeah, it is.
You know,
yeah.
Balancing you know references like this is extremely difficult. You know.
Yeah, and I kind of love that everybody's got their own favorites. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
So for me, like, I think you're slightly younger than me. Are you mid-20s?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were probably born when Jurassic Park, you know, baby when Jurassic Park came out.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. So I was 8 when Jurassic Park came out, and I saw it at the cinema. And I mean, you know, I'd love Spielberg from, you know, E.T. was, I think, probably released about when I was a kid. But, you know, I watched it as a kid because it was on telly every, you know, holiday, festive, anything. And I loved E.T. growing up. And The Goonies was my kind of particular favourite. But Jurassic Park is always the kicker, really. And it was my moment as a kid of being just so scared and so amazed by what I'd seen in front of me. And that film is 25 years old and it still holds up exceptionally well. And that's Spielberg. You know, that's what he does. He pushed boundaries that long ago, you know. And
speaking of E.T., I saw it in the cinema like in January, I think. My cinema has these classics showing every once in a while. So it was great.
What was it like in the cinema? I've never seen it in the cinema, actually.
It was so cool. Much better, of course, than seeing it at home.
I mean, you're
such a great movie.
Yeah, what I like about you particularly is you go and see as much in the cinema as you can, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
You don't have an IMAX, so I think you're being robbed slightly.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I don't have to spend as much money, hopefully.
No, but, you know, that's true.
But it's so expensive nowadays. So.
Yeah, mate, you wouldn't believe. I mean, I think an IMAX in the UK is about £17, which, I don't know, €20, something like that. I'm not sure. You know, it's something crazy. And it's occasionally worth it. Do you know what I mean? I would say, like, Blade Runner and
Dunkirk.
Inception and Dunkirk. Yeah, exactly. There's some films that really work on that. And I think this film, for me, like you said, works in 3D because that car chase, I watched it in 3D. I didn't watch it in 3D IMAX. So I just watched it in 3D. And a lot of people don't like 3D. But for me, when you're watching a film about virtual reality, you want as much hit as you can get. Do you know what I mean? You want that kind of visual hit. Yeah, exactly. And that to me is what did it. And that car chase was amazing when they went forwards, but in reverse, when he finds out that's the message and that's the way to get the first key, was just as incredible because you saw it upside down. And I just thought, this is insane. Do you know what I mean? Because it's seeing it from the same perspective, but just a different perspective of the same race. And I just thought that was such a clever touch because that opening scene is hard to top, actually, I would say. I mean, it's a great film, but it's almost like the first scene is the thing until that big moment, which you talked about, really did blow me away as well.
What's really great about that? About that race sequence, I think, is, you know, in the beginning when the, you know, when they start, you know, there's no dialogue or even, you know, close up on their faces. So it's just the race. You know, the sound goes up, and all these references start coming in, and it's just a thrill ride. You know, cars getting blown away like 2 seconds into the race. It's just chaos.
It's hard to keep up with. It's chaos is the best word, mate. To be fair, it is absolute chaos. And I think that's the thing for me. I was just like, holy shit, this is on another level of craziness, you know? And I just, it really set the tone, to be honest. I think it took me a while, and I'm still probably getting my head around the CG of the characters is exceptionally done, but it does take a bit of the emotion away because it's so animated. Do you know what I mean? And I think what this movie does quite well is it balances the real world and the Oasis, because if you didn't have the real world, which some films don't focus on a little bit, I mean, Avatar tried to blend it a little bit, in fairness, but you need to get that balance right. And I think what this did is it gave more of the less of the Oasis than I think the books do, but it gave more of the characters, which you get to know quite quickly, but that's really important, I think.
What did you think about the true start with the narration and him walking down from his the stacks and getting to his little setup?
Yeah,
with all the narration,
usually frowned upon. Yeah, I liked it actually. It's that to me. There's a few sequences. So the sequences when he's in, I can't remember which city it's in actually. Anyway, when he's in his kind of essentially kind of slum, do you know what I mean? It's post-apocalyptic kind of wasteland, really. And those kind of scenes are as much influenced by Spielberg as the kind of pop culture stuff, because, you know, you watch films like E.T. and the scene when Elliot is looking at his bedroom and looking at that kind of thing, and there's him on his washing machine and dryer, and that's his bed. But there's a couple of parallel scenes there that I really like, and I think the authors talked about that quite a bit. And then there's some other kind of parallel scenes which to me just feel really Spielberg. There's a couple of scenes that remind me of the Goonies, and the Goonies I watched just so many times growing up, and I loved obviously the adventure of the Goonies, but I kind of liked the parts when it was at the beginning, and that kind of, you get a sense of where he's from, and you need that, the character. I think the character development actually is quite natural in this film. It's not as, they're just an oasis, that's their life. I think they did quite well at blending the two, as I said before. So it was really cool. I mean, what did you make of kind of Ty Sheridan's role? I mean, I'm not that familiar with him as an actor. I know he's kind of on the scene. There's a couple of moments to me, he looked a lot like Shia LaBeouf, and I was like, that's why Spielberg's cast him.
probably.
He did feel like that. He always is looking for that new actor to work with, isn't he? I think that's Spielberg as a role.
Yeah, but he's so good with younger people, you know.
Yeah.
Probably the best in the world with acting with using kids.
To put it like you've got to be carefully your English, man. That's fine. Yeah,
no, think twice,
he's casting children and using them effectively in their roles, I guess.
In his exceptional movies, you know.
No, yeah. I mean, I remember Ty Sheridan a little bit from Mud, which is a really cool indie film that you might have seen, with Matthew McConaughey. And then he's done a couple of things like that, but I think actually he did really settle into this role. I thought he was really good as Wade and as Farzival. I thought you kind of believed, well, I think you believed his performance, to be honest.
I'm very happy with it. You know, not all performances, but most, you know, and he as the main character was definitely, you know, satisfying this job rather well.
Yeah, I think so.
Both outside the Oasis and inside the spiritual realm.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It must be hard as a, I was thinking in films like this, it must be hard as an actor to go, right, one minute you're going to be, you know, one minute you're going to be yourself kind of thing, and then next minute you're going to be an animation. And some actors are really good at doing voice parts. I always point to, and we do this on the AI on the comic pod, talk about Zoe Saldana a little bit. Obviously, she's Gamora, but she also played character in Avatar, and she's basically in every big franchise because she's in Star Trek as well. So she's basically made for life in comic terms. Do you know what I mean? She can sit up to any event and get paid. but she plays it really well when she's in Avatar because she obviously has no human role. It's just, and I thought that was one of the kind of standouts for me. And this film had a few parallels with Avatar because it's a lot more about being in a virtual world in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
And being lost in that world rather than living real, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, there's parallels in the fact that, you know, the main character in Avatar doesn't have use of his legs and, you know, is pretty miserable, and the life he's leading is full of depression and anxiety and all the rest of it, whereas he can be someone else. And I think that's what the Oasis was designed to do, and that's what they got across really well, because I think in current climates, obviously the virtual reality systems that exist, and I know you're quite a big gamer, aren't anywhere near that level, obviously. But I would imagine one day they strive to be that level. I mean, gaming is still advancing at a pretty exceptional rate, you know? So
yeah, I'm not a big VR guy as of now, you know, in
no.
our world. I don't think, you know, from what I've seen, it hasn't reached the desired level
yet. I don't think
yet,
it's there yet. No, I don't think it excites people that much yet, because I don't think the games are just up to the standard, you know?
Yeah, it looks so, you know, clunky, you know, how you move and everything like that. You would like one of those like treadmills he's got.
Yeah,
in the
he's
movie.
Got a he's got like a moving treadmill, and he's got all these
it's
special
like an,
suits and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's cool, man. Because you know, gamers do like their tech, and I get it. I get what they're going with, and I can kind of see where the future is kind of going with gaming. But
yeah, and the more
cool
immersiveness,
because,
the better, you know.
Yeah,
we always want that extra frame, that extra, you know, quality and sound.
Well, yeah,
everything.
I know you're big on your kind of definition and stuff, and I think these kind of films, you mentioned Dunkirk earlier and stuff, but there are things that don't sit well on a small screen, and strangely for me, this film will probably do both, because it's the kind of film that I quite like to watch quite a lot, you know. It's just a likable. Spielberg films have that kind of, you know, charm about them, don't they? That you can you can switch them on a Sunday afternoon, and it's just one of those films that you can just kind of sit back and enjoy, without having to. There's no heavy lifting involved, you know. It's
Most of them are
heavier films. He's done, you know, Munich, and he's done, you know, Minority Report to an extent, and Saving Private Ryan and stuff. So there are films in there, but a lot of them are just, you know, classic.
Yeah, most of them are so easy to get into as well, you know, like Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, even E.T., Close Encounters. Just when you start them, when you put them on, you can't really turn off, because, you know, they're so easy to watch and
I would say
enjoyable,
AI is
even
slightly
though.
Different to that. I don't know if you've watched AI, but I watched it recently as part of my 100 movies. That is not an easy film to watch.
I think I've seen it, but it was so long ago.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't rush back to it anyway. But it's interesting. And actually, given, you know, I watched Tintin quite recently. And again, that's just a kind of good adventure kind of film. He does have a great way of telling an adventure story, you know. And this felt to me, like I said, there's a few times in this film I just felt younger again. And that's always nice when you're getting older, but it's nice to feel like that adventure again. And it did feel like a few moments in this of just pure Spielberg, and it's a hard thing to describe, but he's just got a certain way of directing that just brings you back to when you were a kid. Do you know what I mean? It's quite miraculous that he can do that, and he just does that so well. The fact that he's gone off to make The Post, and then he comes back and does this, and then it'll go off, and I know he's looking at Indiana Jones again, but it's such a kind of a director that is just so versatile in what he does. And this film is more of the fun side of Spielberg that I think has been missing for a little while in his films, to be honest.
Yeah, because I probably had more fun in this movie than, you know, what I actually liked the quality of it, if you say it like that.
I think that's fair.
You know, was probably the most fun I've had in the theater for a long, long time. But, you know, if you're going to...
I think for me, since maybe Ragnarok, to be honest, last year was just so fun.
Yeah. But that's fun in a different way, though, because that's just so much humor.
Yeah.
Like it is.
Yeah,
the
I guess if you're
humor.
Talking about an adventure movie, you're right. It's hard to think of them because... Baby Driver had a few elements of it, actually, for me, but not the same way, because it's a bit different edge. Yeah, I don't... The thing is, though, this film, I thought, right, okay, so my little boy's 7, and we are going to go and see Infinity War, and he does like Marvel and stuff, and I thought this film might be really good for him. And I went to see this film, and I was like, right, no, because the Shining scene will mean he will never sleep ever again. And I was just blown away by that, because this film doesn't have that much of an edge to it. And I think there's a couple of points, and we can talk about some criticisms, which I think are fair, in a little bit. But the villain isn't that convincing, and Ben Mendelsohn's a really good actor, but I think the book is better written, apparently, for the villain, and a lot darker edge. But so they took that away, but then they put in, instead of Monty Python, which makes sense because it's not relevant for younger audience, or pop culture audience really nowadays, and they put in The Shining scene, and you can talk through that because I think it's probably everyone's favourite scene in the film, really, that whole
Yeah, it's
section.
Gotta be. Either that or the race in the beginning, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Shining scene, holy shit. you know, when I saw it the first time, and they stood in that ring in the virtual reality world and was going to choose the movie to jump into, to see. Just talking about that for a second, I don't hope to see, like, even the audience to, you know, be clever for a moment, you know, see a few options, and maybe if you know your stuff well, you can maybe, you know, guess the right one. And they, like, just show it for a second, scroll through it, and next one. But, yeah, so they picked The Shining. The jumping down to outside the theater, says Stanley Kubrick's The Shining playing now.
Yeah.
And that, and, you know, when it truly hits me was when the music started, you know, the opening music from The Shining. That slow burner.
Well, it's one of the characters freaks out and gets lost and then enters the famous room, but I can't remember what the room number is, but
247.
And the beautiful young woman turns into the very menacing old lady, and I was just like, it took me completely by surprise because I was just like, shit, where's this come from, you know, because it's such a bold thing to do.
He did it so cleverly as well, because, you know, they walk off into the main room, you know, where the typer is and all that, you know, and then, you know, there's references just start coming, or the scenes from the movie, you know, the tennis ball, the twins, versus the elevator, you know, all the blood's coming out, then comes into room 237, and then they pull him out of there, you know, from the freezer, and then he just act like it didn't happen. You know, he just gave us all these cool scenes, and then just, you know, they closed the door, and that was it.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a bit in the maze.
For sure. Yeah,
and it's just such a clever thing to do, because I listened earlier on today. So Empire have done a podcast, and they're interviewing the author who wrote the screenplay, and he said they tried to get the rights to do Blade Runner, and they were going to do a scene in Blade Runner, you know, when they're doing when they've got to speak, you know, the replicants have got to speak and convince them that they're not a replicant. And I can't remember what the test is called. And they were going to do that. And Spielberg's a big friend with Ridley Scott. But the rules behind it, whoever owns the rights to it, even though Warner Brothers kind of do, but they don't, and they just couldn't get the rights to it. And I'm so glad they didn't, because when they settled on The Shining, it's just like the perfect.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
part of the film. It just because it's so different to the rest of the film. And it still had a bit of comedy in there. Do you know what I mean? It's still very light, but it was just really shocking. And it was great. I thought it was really, really clever. And I think, like we talked about earlier, I think that and the race scene are the two things they brought in that weren't in the book and make a load of sense because it's just much more relevant to audiences of the cinema, really.
Yeah, I was, the Shining sequence is literally the most fun, or most shocking,
Yeah,
not to expect that at least.
Yeah.
So cool.
It is shocking, man. Yeah, it's shocking is very true.
Yeah, and how far they went with it. You could have just picked the movie, maybe seen a scene or two from, within that hotel. And, dude, how did they do the hotel? How did it recreate it? Did it build a scene and, add grain afterwards? Because, when they walked down, when they're in the hotel, you can see the grain like it's the original one.
Yeah, it is amazing, man. I think some of the producers are such big fans that it just made things to that level of detail because of the knowledge of the films. And I think that's the thing with this. It's funny because you've got all these people, you've got an author who loves Spielberg, and then Spielberg chooses to make his movie. You've got Spielberg who loves everything pop culture and is just it's a kind of big geek in himself, do you know what I mean? And then everyone involved in the whole process is just obsessed with all this pop culture. And I mean, I usually pride myself on knowing quite lots of these things because, I've watched, like you, a lot of films and a lot of games over the years and music and stuff. But there's so much in here, man. It's just insane.
I think both of us...
soundtrack, actually. Yeah, the soundtrack the soundtrack was brilliant in this film. I think that 80s kind of vibe to it, but it really works as well.
Yeah. Because I think both of us know more than the average person, but in a movie like this, there's so many references, but many of them go over our heads as well.
Oh, loads go over my head.
There's chicken like the lists and stuff people have made afterwards, mentioning all the references they've seen.
There's a really cool article, on Vulture that I think I linked to you, and it's got nearly all the references, but they've probably missed loads in there. I think for the gaming ones, for me, my favourite was probably Gordo from Mortal Kombat. what's her name as a character? This is a classic me for not remembering the names of characters. So Olivia Cooke character's Artemis. She's Samantha or otherwise, but when she is basically wearing a fake outfit as a avatar as Gordo, and she drags him aside to say, look, you're famous now because you've unlocked the key, so you can't be like this. But I just thought that was a really cool scene.
The alien popping out of her chest.
Yeah.
And then slicing a rope and like a zipper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just thought it was really cool, man. And that was one of my favorite references. There's a lot of gaming references in there. I think my other one was probably Chucky, which I just thought was the coolest thing when they introduced Chucky in the kind of last battle scene. And then there's loads more, man. I mean, we obviously mentioned some of the other gaming stuff. I didn't really play the Atari. It would have been way before your time. But I played an Amiga, which is a little bit later, but there's some kind of similar things in there. And yeah, I kind of like my classic games, although I kind of got addicted to Halo as a kind of few years back and stuff. And there's some really good Halo moments. And then Duke Nukem was in there, which I just saw was ace because I played that as a kid. And just tons, man. You know, there is tons and tons of stuff. The battle scene at the end, and that's just because we're talking these kind of action sequences, really. I thought the Iron Giant versus Godzilla, and then the Japanese famous kind of, I can't remember what it's called.
Me neither, but it was awesome.
Yeah, but it was awesome, man. I just thought, the Iron Giant is again a change from the book, but I thought it worked really well, actually, because it's quite a big thing of a lot of people's childhood, and I thought it was nice to kind of throw that in there. But the battle scene itself was pretty epic, to be honest. And there's so much going on, so much CG, but it kind of works, man. It's really seamless.
Yeah, but I think that's because, he you know, in a book, you know, you have to write every reference, you know, they have to be literally, you know, in words. But, you know, in a visual medium like film, you can have so many characters and stuff, you know, in the background, in the backdrop, and just, you know, movie moves rather quickly, so there's, you know, quite quick scenes.
Yeah.
So you might not even catch them the third time watching the movie, that's fourth, fifth, or sixth time maybe. So I think that helps, you know, because there's so many players and, you know, come into that fight, and almost all of them are referencing something.
Yeah.
That, you know, as the, you know, when it zooms out and you see a wide shot of the entire fight, you know, just like any fight, you know, to like a war, you know, people coming together from
different
fights, you know, clashing. But yeah, as you said, the Iron Man, I think, Iron Giant was a clever idea, you know, because you want that, you need kind of a big character to focus on.
Well, you know, I like that the character. I like the character of H is the one that kind of develops the Iron Giant and has been working on it, and she's kind of a cool, well, bit of a catfish actually in the film terms, because they think she's, well, he thinks she's a boy and she's actually a girl, which I thought was quite fun. And I just think it was cool that she created things and she fixed the Akira bike in like seconds.
He's completely smashed and
exactly
done in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I did think, I mean, Lena Waite did a good job actually, because she was quite likable. I like that you got to see, like we said, a lot of the actors as themselves, not just their avatars, because you needed that humanity in there. And I think it just about got enough. You know, like you said, there's a few issues with it, and I think the structure is probably a little bit too long, but then it went so quick because it was such a fun film, so it's hard. It's hard to get that much in when you've got so much to reference, I guess. I think, to me, the star is probably Olivia Cooke as Artemis and Samantha, because I think she played it really well as Artemis. I thought she was really intriguing. I like Parzival's attraction to her, and I thought it was kind of fun when they're doing the club scene and the dance and Saturday Night Fever and stuff. But I think as a character outside of the Oasis, she was probably most interesting. And I think she put the most on the line, really. It was her cause as much as anyone's to try and find salvation, because she had the backstory with the parents. And I think you cared about her fate as much as anything in the film.
Yeah, I thought Olivia Cooke was excellent, to be honest. And both, as you said, in the Oasis and outside, and yeah, for sure, she had, you know, her story was more interesting to follow outside the Oasis than Sheridan's, to be honest. Or so, you know, his story, you know, we have like two scenes with his aunt and her boyfriend.
Oh, and you just didn't care about them.
No, sorry, you know, no, but he didn't either. That's the weird part, no. You know, because we have like had two scenes with them, and then they die. You know, he walks off, and you know, he gets taken and brought to Olivia Cooke and her friends, and you know, they begin. It's he wakes up and, you know, starts chatting with her, and oh, you're Artemis, and you know, they walk out to like the roof garden,
yeah,
and they chat about different other stuff. So you know, they never address that again. Just this only living family member died.
Yeah, exactly, and I think it's because I think it's what it's trying to get across a little bit is that that's the world that they got used to living in a little bit. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, I think what's it said, 2045, and the world's changed, and I think they only care about, especially his character only cares about when he's in the Oasis, and I guess what she does is she cares more about outside of the Oasis. She's doing what she's doing in the Oasis to find this, you know, find the keys, but for the greater good kind of thing. So it had a few parallels with, you know, a couple of films in recent years. It's got that kind of Maze Runner, Mockingjay kind of vibe to it a little bit, you know, but it's done with Spielberg's kind of deftness of touch a little bit. So I think it did elevate it a little bit. Not that those films don't have value, but, you know.
And I can sort of understand it one way, because, you know, he's, you know, the real world doesn't really offer him anything. You know, he doesn't seem to be on the same level as her aunt. You know, the last scene together, she basically tells him to clean up clean up his act, or he'll like be,
yeah,
you know, be shut out from the house. So, you know, they're not that close, but and still, I thought it kind of was kind of abrupt.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, what do you think of the main kind of issues? Because let's be honest, with a film like this, I think you either love it or you hate it, really. I mean, I just think it's, some people will go, too many references, too much pop culture, too much everything, visuals, that kind of thing. And I think for being honest, a film like this, I had to see it at the cinema, but I didn't know whether I was going to like it. I genuinely didn't know if I was going to like it. And I'm really quite pleasantly surprised I did. And I'm for a change, and I'm normally such a bastard for this, but I'm quite willing to forgive its flaws because of the fun you have watching it. And not all films do that to me. Sometimes they don't. I don't know, man. I think I've been Spielberg. I think he's done something when I watched that film that just made me forgive some of the weaknesses in there. But I mean, if you said there are some, what for you were the kind of major issues with the film?
Probably, you know, the outside world, to be honest. You know, like we just talked about with his aunt, you know, their relationship is pretty weak, and we don't really get to see much of this decayed world that they're talking about, and, you know, that's not really worth living in, you know. Everyone would rather be in the Oasis. But you don't, you know, we only really see the stacks, and that's pretty much it. You know, they drive through the streets sometimes, but, you know, they're so focused on what's happening right then and there, you know, you can't really take it in what you see on the streets.
Yeah,
that's probably the biggest one, you know.
That makes sense, actually. I think when you look at it, say, compared to, I don't know, say, compare it to Blade Runner visually. So different levels, different style. But Blade Runner 2049, what it did is it kind of showed you the city streets, which you got in the original Blade Runner, but then it showed you different things, man. It showed you different areas, you know, Vegas and Nevada, and then the farm and stuff, which give you a different sense of what's going on there. And
yeah, and a larger understanding on why everyone wants to escape to the Oasis. All the
I think the budget went on the Oasis. I think when you watch this film, I think the budget and the effort really did go on the Oasis. Because of how much is going on and how much visually and how much production value goes into something like that.
It's crazy. Yeah, but that's mainly my main negative with the movie, really. And as you talked about it a little bit as well, you know, Ben Mendelsohn's character, Sorrento.
I didn't get it, man. I don't think they did. Dude, a couple of things I had with Ben Mendelsohn's character, and I'll talk about Mark Rylance and Simon Pegg a little bit in a minute. But Mendelsohn he wasn't very intimidating. I thought his avatar didn't really fit. I just didn't really know what his end game was. Do you know what I mean? You know, what was he trying to achieve? Because he acted like he was a mentor, but essentially just got coffee, didn't he? It was not like there was anything there for him to achieve, you know.
It seemed it was only just about money in the end, but they kind of wanted to make it personal, you know, with that scene that you referenced there, you know, with him only handing out the coffee to Mark Rylance's character.
But there was nothing there to dislike about what Halliday did to him. Do you know what I mean? There was nothing, the chip on his shoulder or not, there was no reason to have one. Do you know what I mean? So, I didn't really get his motives, and I thought that was a little bit lacking. I did kind of like, so TJ Miller played I-Rock, who was the guy that brought the orb and that kind of stuff, where the big, you know, chest, the skull and crossbow kind of armor.
I thought he was character. Fun,
man. he was a ridiculous character, but have you played online gaming before? Because I've spoken to 1,000 people like that in online gaming.
For sure. You know, it's constantly going on about the orb, whatever it was.
Yeah, just knows more than everybody else, but is equally really annoying.
And it's a great scene in the, you know, that for the dance sequence. You know, he takes a seat with the three girls, you know, everyone he leans in, they lean in, and he's like, fuck off, or get out, whatever he says.
No, exactly. Yeah, no, I thought he was quite good, actually. I did think he was quite good. The kind of other characters surrounding Ty Sheridan weren't, like we said, that significant. It really was around him and Olivia Cooke. But I did think Mark Rylance, he plays quite a similar role a lot of the time. But I thought he was quite effective as Halliday. I did think he looked like an age Garth out of Wayne's World. I will say that much. But he was pretty effective. I kind of liked his story and I liked the way he delivered it. And I did really love the sequence at the end of the film with him and his younger self.
I think he gave the best acting performance in the entire movie. He's always so good. Love my friend. But yeah, as you said, quite similar to other roles, you know.
He's been typecast a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but he kind of gave it a little bit mixed. But, you know, he's slowed it down even more. You know, he really gave that feeling that he was a true gamer, wanted to create this world for other people, you know, and just dedicated to play rather than winning and then creating an empire for everyone to.
He didn't care about the money, did he? You know, that's the thing. You know, you got the impression that he made it to escape because he didn't really have a life outside of it. But he also made it for other people to enjoy. And I think he portrayed that actually really well. And like I said, I think the scene at the end, when all is done and dusted and he's there with his kind of child self, in his old bedroom, I think that's probably the best scene in the film in terms of the script and what's delivered. And yeah, I thought he nailed that. And then, I think adding on to that, I think Simon Pegg, albeit was quite brief in the film,
but effective, I thought.
Really effective, man. I think he was really good.
Yeah, you know, at the very end, you know, when he's opening the truck, you know, he's having a chat with the Sheridan's character. So you can really see him get emotional for a second and then embracing his team, the high fives.
Yeah. You know,
he did a really good job as well.
Yeah, I think he did. I think it's quite nice with actors like Simon Pegg because. I don't know. I've always kind of watched Simon Pegg. So, you don't listen to, I don't know if you listen to much of my other stuff, but, so I don't shut up about Edgar Wright because that's just me.
I've heard you talk about it before. Once or twice.
But I kind of like, obviously always a soft spot for Simon Pegg because his writing's really good. He's a really sophisticated writer actually and works really closely with Edgar Wright on a lot of films. And I think Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And then he's been quite brave as an actor because he went off to do Star Trek and Mission Impossible, obviously he's been involved with for a long time now. And I think he wrote the last Star Trek film, which obviously isn't the best Star Trek film, but I don't think he had the right director. But he's done some really interesting work. And then he's obviously worked quite closely with Spielberg a couple of times. You know, got Spielberg to act briefly in Paul, which was quite cool. And yeah, it's nice, man, because he's an interesting actor. I think he's done extremely well for himself. But it's nice seeing him doing slightly different roles because he's normally the comedic kind of guy, you know? That's his role, yeah.
Was none of it in this movie. You know,
no.
Playing an older character for the most part. You know, his most essential scenes are older guy.
Brilliantly. And he's obviously got those links in the movie throughout because he plays the kind of Ask Jeeves character. It's all I describe him as. When he's doing the whole showing him around the memories and the sequences and stuff.
It was an awesome reveal, I thought. You know,
I thought it was a great reveal. Yeah. I thought it was a great reveal, actually. I thought it was a clever kind of move from the film. Just to give him a little bit more of a role, but also to make him quite influential because he gave him the kind of famous, you know, extra life coin, which I thought was ace. I thought it was a really clever moment when you did feel like hope was lost, but you kind of knew it wasn't because it's never going to end like that in a film like that. But for me, I mean, the big thing to take away from the film, and I think I will talk a couple more of the pop culture references because there's just so many good ones. But the big thing to take away, I think, is it's a film really that maybe a slight generation below us can probably rewatch and take it through their childhood. And I think it's great that Spielberg is still making these kind of films, because I know you love, well, do you love sci-fi? I think you do.
Yeah, sure. Lots of sci-fi.
And there's more a lot better. Of great grown-up sci-fi at the minute, because I'm going to talk about Annihilation quite soon, and Ex Machina, and there's some directors pushing some boundaries, things like Her. And they're kind of modern sci-fi for our generation. There's the kind of horror twist ones that the aliens always kind of inspired, but the kind of modern sci-fi genre is very much about what's going to happen in the future a little bit. You know, Her is about kind of loneliness and being alone, and Ex Machina is almost the same. It's those kind of really modern takes on what the world is moving towards. You know, the social media is a big thing, and virtual reality dating of AI, which will probably happen, let's be perfectly honest. Homes are now full of things like Alexa, and that will only develop into being more personalized and interactive and those kind of things that you see in movies. And films like Minority Report did it years ago. So Spielberg has got that, and Minority Report has got so many things that came to life.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, okay. Like the touchscreen elements in there, you know, that didn't really exist at the time. And then
yeah, it's groundbreaking.
Yeah, and some of the other technological aspects in that film really have, you know, eye retina scans, all that kind of stuff has come into the fore in modern everyday existence, really. You know, smartphones now, iPhone X, you can unlock with your face and stuff. It's really far ahead of itself, actually. So you've got all that kind of generation, which is probably for more our age and above, and then you've got films like this, which are that kind of fantasy sci-fi adventure for younger audiences, but they're really important because, you know, who's to say in 10, 15 years that people growing up with this film won't look back on this as a big kick in nostalgia for their youth, you know, but also maybe a little bit more like, yeah, VR is a big thing in homes in 10 years, you know what I mean? And technology is...
I think maybe someone like your son, was he 7 now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe I'm not going to let him watch it, but yeah.
Give him 10 years or something like that.
But
you know, when he's caught up on all the references, you know, we've seen this movie, not all of them, but, you know, lots of them.
Yeah.
You know, his classic, 80s classics like Jurassic Park, you know, King Kong, Games, Indiana Jones. You see, quite a many of them are mainstream movies.
I can't wait to watch Indiana Jones with my son. It's like the dream.
So I think there's no
Lord of the Rings in here, but other than that, it's pretty much a go hitter for all of my iconic kind of stuff. And you're right, man.
This movie is placed across the generations. It's for us, me in my mid 20s.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure of your age, but you know, a little older.
Early 30s, early 30s, man. I'm not that
quite,
old.
quite 45. No, but you know, so you know, it works for you, of course, and those guys being like 40 or 50, you know, they've lived through all these years, so of course it works for them as well. Maybe not these new ones, maybe the gaming ones.
I think the music ones as well, man. I mean, you've got like you've got your Michael Jackson Thriller, I thought was really cool, and Duran Duran and Purple Rain by Prince, and then you know, some really cool stuff, but then. Being honest, there's films like The Breakfast Club mentioned, and I only recently watched that film. It's a film I've never seen before, and I actually love it because I was really hesitant, and it's just something I've never seen. And then I'm doing this 100 movie thing where I watch 100 new movies this year, which I'm really enjoying, and it's a really cool thing to do. But I'm watching films that I've never seen before, and that was referenced, and I love that because I just seen that recently. Obviously, Aliens, as we mentioned. Iron Giant, Battlestar Galactica, Akira. I mean, Back to the Future is just like one of my films growing up, and to see that referenced in the first couple of minutes on the posters and everything is really, really cool. But then, like you said, the gaming ones, man, the gaming references are great. The classic kind of Pac-Man, Space Invaders, those kind of things are all over the place. And there's a couple of hints to like Mario Kart and obviously that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's elements in there of those style of games. But it's great.
There's quite a lot of, you know, name dropping, you know, for
yeah, there's loads
Mario Kart for sure was name dropped.
Yeah. There's so
I wish
many...
I was, I'd see, you know, I'd never played the Atari, you know, young.
No, I mean, you can get ports of everything, you know, everything.
Yeah.
But... And it does feel, I mean, it feels like a time for nostalgic TV and cinema, really, because, you know, Stranger Things, I mean, Jesus, it's huge, isn't it? And that is essentially 80s. It's yeah. all the childhood 80s stuff. It's Ghostbusters, it's Poltergeist, it's E.T. And then you've got the kind of 80s kind of making a comeback in lots of ways. And lots of the films being made now are kind of going back to that generation and era. And some are remakes and some are kind of new tellings. And I think this did well to kind of do the get the blend right. It's got enough modern without feeling too just nostalgia. But I think it does get the nostalgia hit really well done at times. And yeah, like you said, I think it's a really good movie, and I think it's a really fun movie, and I think that's why people will watch it a lot. And I hope it's Spielberg, it'll do well. Obviously, it's done well at the box office, but it's good in kind of sci-fi and fantasy terms. You've got space for films like this, and then you've still got space for things like Blade Runner 2049, and you've got, well, Annihilation wasn't released at cinemas, which is quite frustrating, but you've got space for things like that as well. So so yeah, it's a good kind of balance, really. So I think we'll talk a little bit of Spielberg before we wrap, but it's a very, very difficult question I might ask you. But have you got like a top three Spielberg films? Is that something you could possibly do, or is that just far too difficult?
Yeah, I can immediately do my favorite one. You know, I hate doing Frankie's Man.
I know, man. That's
so
I'll put you on the spot.
It's so hard. But, you know, if I had to choose, I'd probably have Jurassic Park as number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's arguably
doesn't have
my...
to be in any particular order. It's
oh,
not
thank
a problem.
You, thank you.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park for sure, then. Arguably my favorite movie of all time.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah. One of them, at least. You know, top 10. I think I've said it on Twitter, you know, it's my favorite, but you know, give me a week and I'll change my mind.
Yeah, man, it's so hard with films and ranking, I know. And I know he's done so many kind of iconic films that it's really hard, but...
Yeah. And Raiders have to be there, you know.
Yeah, Raiders was on one of mine.
Yeah, it was on the TV constantly growing up. Every channel was showing it.
Raiders is just iconic, man. Yeah. I mean, Raiders...
So rewatchable.
If you talk about adventure movies, I think Raiders is the number one. It's the one that you really do feel like you're going on this kind of epic adventure. And it's just, it's to me, it's like peak Harrison Ford, even above Star Wars, and I'll probably get shot for that. But it's just such a great role, and it's such a great film, and all of them, really. Have you ever seen a film called Empire of the Sun? I'm quite intrigued if you have.
I don't think I have, but I know what you're talking about.
It's early Spielberg, but it's got very young Christian Bale in it and a slightly older John Malkovich. I think you'd really like it. It's really cool. I think you should check it out. That's one of mine, because a lot of people haven't really watched that, so it's one that I really do love.
Yeah. Third option would probably be in this list, I think. Another one that I saw multiple times growing up, you know.
I don't think I can reveal that is on my list of things I've not seen for this year.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know how, and it's one of those films that it's very tricky with films that are quite intense, because I think you have to be in a certain mood to watch certain films. And strangely, and I've seen Shawshank like 20 times, but I hadn't seen Shawshank until I was about 18. Or 19 or 20, and the same with Good Will Hunting. I've seen that so many times since, because I just think it depends on the time of your life when it comes out and when it's, you know, and it just, for me, I just missed it, and it's one of those. It probably will. Most people, I mean, adore that film, and I'm sure I will. A few for me, I mean, there's so many. I mentioned Minority Report before, but it definitely hits my top five. I love that film. Catch Me If You Can is one of my favorite Spielberg films, because it's my favorite DiCaprio film as well, actually, to be honest.
Oh, really?
And might be my favorite Tom Hanks film. I just think, again, it's just incredible storytelling. I think that's what I associate with Spielberg. It's just amazing storytelling. And I can always watch that film, you know, and I think that's what we said about his films. They're just so watchable, man. And then I've got a big soft spot for Munich because I just think it pushes so many good boundaries. And Eric Bana's just incredible in that film. But there's loads, man. And you could go back and I love, obviously, Raiders and I love The Last Crusade. And yeah. I don't really love Temple of Doom, but it's endless. Yeah, it is endless. Yeah. And E.T. as well.
Close Encounters, for sure. Jaws.
Jaws, man. As well, man. I mean, Jaws is just iconic beyond belief. And that's the thing. That's the thing with Spielberg, man. There's just so much to choose from. And he's still making great films. And I mean, and he's still going to make a lot more great films. And that's what's incredible about him.
For sure, for sure.
So, yeah, I think we've pretty much covered the movie in its fullest, to be honest. I'm really glad you enjoyed it. I'm really glad you had the time to come on and talk about it. And it's a kind of film I just hope people do get to see at the cinema, you know. It's just, it's got that kind of must-see-at-the-cinema kind of vibe to it. Because it's visually, it's what it's all about. That's the whole kicker in the film is the visuals. It's really mind blowing. I've invited you on in the future to talk about another kind of iconic director. And I think what people might grasp from this pod that I'm kind of direction wise is moving in the way of talking about directors and their work a little bit, because it's not something I always recognise growing up about the director and what vision they have and what they make. But if you don't kind of follow directors as such, if you look at a film you love and then look at who directed it, the likelihood is you'll love the other films by that person. Because it's, you know, I always talk about David Fincher, because anyone asks me about a good thriller and I'll say, right, you can watch Seven, you can watch Zodiac, you can watch, you know, go on Chang Tattoo or go on Netflix and watch what's the series he did last year. It won't come to me because my brain is fried at this time of the evening. I'll mention it at some stage. And it's the same with, you know, Spielberg, as you mentioned. And we're going to go and talk about quite a modern director in a few weeks' time. Denis Villeneuve, who famously did Blade Runner 2049, Prisoners, and a film that you always tell me to watch, which I will, which is Incendiaries or Incendi?
Incendi, I think.
Incendi, French. Okay, so is it French?
The French pronunciation is, yeah. I think I've told you to watch that at least five times, you know.
At least five times, yeah. I am going to watch it because I want to watch it quite soon before we do this. And recently, Arrival, of course, and what's the other film we did a few years ago? Before Prisoners. Or was it, have I mentioned Prisoners?
Enemy?
Enemy, yeah, as well. And it's just some really exceptional filmmaking, to be honest. So it would be cool to talk about him in some detail and might get another guest on who I've got in mind.
Yeah. Thank you for your time. Thank you for having me on.
No, mate, it's a pleasure. It's really good to chat. And you know, what this film might teach some people, and is social media is great for meeting people like-minded. I think there's a really good connection of film lovers on Twitter, you know, if you know where to find them. And it's good because you get inspiration for talking about films and watching films and stuff. So it's really cool. So no, you are always welcome, but yeah, it'd be good to have you on in a few weeks time. That's it for me. I will be back next week, hopefully, talking about Alex Garland and Annihilation, Ex Machina, Dread, Beach, maybe some of the screenplays he's done, 28 Days Later. So that's going to be really cool with a couple of great guests. And then I've got a Wes Anderson podcast before we come back to Denis Villeneuve in a few weeks' time. So thanks very much for listening. I will be back with you shortly.
Stop.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.